Welcome to Stories from the Shadows, haunted tales from the golden age of ghost stories and supernatural horror fiction. I'm Odell, reading Sweeney Todd. Chapter 5. The clock struck the hour of meeting, and Joanna looked anxiously for anyone who should seem to her to bear the appearance of being a man such as she might suppose Markin Jestery would choose for his friend. She turned her eyes towards the gate, for she thought she heard it close, and saw a gentlemanly-looking man attired in a cloak, and who was looking about, apparently in search of someone. His eye fell upon her, and he immediately produced from beneath his cloak a flower, and in another minute they met. "I have the honor," he said, "of speaking to Miss Joanna Oakley."
"Yes, and you are Markin Jestery's messenger?"
"I am proud to say that I am he who comes to bring you news of Markin Jestery, but sorry to say I am not the messenger that was expressly deputed by him."
"Your looks are sad and serious. You seem as if you would announce that some misfortune has occurred. Tell me that it is not so. Speak to me at once, or my heart will break."
"Calm yourself, lady, I pray you."
"I cannot, dare not do so, unless you tell me he lives. Tell me that Markin Jestery lives, and then I shall be all patience. Tell me that, and you shall not hear a murmur from me. Speak the word at once, at once. It is cruel, believe me, it is cruel to keep me in this suspense."
"This is one of the saddest errands I ever came upon," said the stranger, as he led Joanna to a seat. "Recollect, lady, what creatures of accident and chance we are."
"No more, no more," shrieked Joanna as she clasped her hands. "I know all now, and am desolate."
She let her face drop upon her hands and shook as with a convulsion of grief.
"Mark, Mark," she cried, "you've gone from me. I thought not this. I thought not this. Oh, heaven, why have I lived so long as to have the capacity to listen to such fearful tidings? Lost. Lost. All lost. God of heaven, what a wilderness the world is to me now."
"Let me pray you, lady, to subdue this passion of grief, and listen truly to what I shall unfold to you. There is much to hear and much to speculate upon, and if from all that I have learnt, I cannot, dare not tell you that Markin Jestery lives, I likewise shrink from telling you he is no more.
Speak again. Say those words again. There is a hope, then? Oh, there is a hope?"
"There is a hope. And better it is that your mind should receive the first shock of the probability of the death of him whom you have so anxiously expected, and then afterwards, from what I shall relate to you, gather hope that it may not be so, then that from the first you should expect too much, and then have those expectations rudely destroyed." They both sat upon the garden seat, and while Joanna fixed her eyes upon her companion's face, expressive as it was of the most generous emotions and noble feelings, he commenced relating to her the incidents which never left her memory, and in which she took so deep an interest.
"You must know," he said, "that what it was which so much inflamed the imagination of Markin Jestery consisted in this. There came to London a man with a well-authenticated and extremely well-put-together report that there had been discovered, in one of the small islands near the Indian seas, a river which deposited an enormous quantity of gold dust in its progress to the ocean. He told his story so well, and seemed to be such a perfect master of all the circumstances connected with it, that there was scarcely room for a doubt upon the subject. The thing was kept quiet and secret, and a meeting was held of some influential men, influential on account of the money they possessed, among whom was one who had towards Mark and Jestery most friendly feelings. So Mark attended the meeting with this friend of his, although he felt his utter incapacity from want of resources to take any part in the affair. But he was not aware of what his friend's generous intentions were in the matter until they were explained to him, and they consisted in this. He, the friend, was to provide the necessary means for embarking in the adventure, so far as regarded taking a share in it, and he told Mark in Jestery that if he would go personally on the expedition, he should share in the proceeds with him, be they what they might. Now, to a young man like Jestery, totally destitute of personal resources, but of ardent and enthusiastic temperament, you can imagine how extremely tempting such an offer was likely to be. He embraced it at once with the greatest pleasure. It is from the lips of another instead of from mine. But you ought to have heard what I am now relating. That gentleman whose name was Thornhill ought to have made to you this communication. But by some strange accident it seems that he has been prevented, or you would not be here listening to me upon a subject which would have come better from his lips. They sailed in an ill-fated ship, but I must not anticipate. Let me proceed in my narrative with regularity. The ship was called the Star, and if those who went with it looked upon it as the star of their destiny, they were correct enough, and it might be considered an evil star for them, inasmuch as nothing but disappointment and bitterness became their ultimate portion. And Mark and Jestery, I am told, was the most hopeful man on board. Already in imagination, he could fancy himself homeward bound with the vessel, ballasted and crammed with the rich produce of that shining river. Already he fancied what he could do with his abundant wealth, and I have not a doubt but that, in common with many who went on that adventure, he enjoyed to the full the spending of the wealth he should obtain in imagination, perhaps indeed more than if he had obtained it in reality. Among the adventurers was one Thornhill, who had been a lieutenant in the Royal Navy, and between him and young Jestery there arose a remarkable friendship, a friendship so strong and powerful that there can be no doubt that they communicated to each other all their hopes and fears, and if anything could materially tend to beguile the tedium of such a weary voyage as those adventurers had undertaken, it would certainly be the free communication and confidential intercourse between two such kindred spirits as Thornhill and Mark and Jestery. You will bear in mind, Miss Oakley, that in making this communication to you, I am putting together what I myself heard at different times, so as to make it for you a distinct narrative, which you can have no difficulty in comprehending, because, as I before stated, I never saw Mark and Jestery, and it was only once, for about 5 minutes, that I saw the vessel in which he went upon his perilous adventure. For perilous it turned out to be, to the Indian seas. It was from Thornhill I got my information during the many weary and monotonous hours consumed in a homebound voyage from India. It appears that without accident or cross of any description to the Star, it reached the Indian Ocean and the supposed immediate locality of the spot where the treasure was to be found. And there she was spoken with by a vessel homeward bound from India called the Neptune. It was evening, and the sun had sunk in the horizon with some appearances that betokened a storm. I was on board that Indian vessel, but did not expect anything serious, although we made every preparation for rough weather, and as it turned out, it was well indeed that we did, for never within the memory of the oldest seaman had such a storm ravished the coast. A furious gale, which it was impossible to withstand, drove us southward, but by the utmost precautions we escaped with trifling damage, but we were driven at least 200 miles out of our course, and instead of getting, as we ought to have done, to the Cape by a certain time, we were an immense distance eastward of it. It was just as the storm, which lasted 3 nights and 2 days, began to abate, that towards the horizon we saw a dull red light, and as it was not in a quarter of the sky where any such appearance might be imagined, nor were we in a latitude where electrophenomena might be expected, we steered toward it, surmising what turned out afterwards to be fully correct.
"It was a ship on fire," said Joanna.
"It was." "Alas, alas, I guessed it. A frightful suspicion from the first crossed my mind."
"But how knew you?" said Joanna, as she clasped her hands, and the pallid expression of her countenance betrayed the deep interest she took in the narration.
"How knew you that ship was the Star? Might it not have been some other ill-fated vessel that met with so dreadful a fate?"
"I will tell you. The captain of the Indiaman kept his glass at his eye, and presently he said to me, 'There's a floating piece of wreck and something clinging to it. I know not if there be a man, but what I can perceive seems to me to be the head of a dog.' I looked through the glass myself, and saw the same object, but as we neared it, we found it was a large piece of the wreck, with a dog and a man supported by it, who were clinging with all the energy of desperation. In 10 minutes more, we had them on board the vessel. The man was Lieutenant Thornhill, I've before mentioned, and the dog belonged to him. He related to us that the ship we had seen burning was the Star, and that it had never reached its destination, and that he believed all had perished but himself and the dog, for although one of the boats had been launched, so desperate a rush was made into it by the crew that it had swamped, and all perished. He related to the captain and myself the object of the voyage of the Star, and the previous particulars with which I have made you acquainted. And then during the night watch he said to me, 'I have a very sad mission to perform when I get to London.' On board our vessel was a young man named Mark Ingestry, and some short time before the vessel in which we went down he begged of me to call upon a young lady named Joanna Oakley, the daughter of a spectacle maker in London, providing I should be saved, and he perish, and of the latter event he felt so strong a presentiment that he gave me a string of pearls, which I was to present to her in his name. But where he got them, I have not the least idea, for they are of immense value. Mr. Thornhill showed me the pearls, which were of different sizes, roughly strung together, but of great value. And when we reached the River Thames, which was only 3 days since, he left us with his dog, carrying his string of pearls with him, to find out where you reside."
"Alas, he never came."
"No, from all inquiries we could make, he disappeared somewhere about Fleet Street. We traced him from Temple Stairs to a barber there named Sweeney Todd. But beyond there, no information can be obtained."
"Gracious heaven!"
"What makes the affair more extraordinary is that nothing will induce Thornhill's dog to leave the place."
"Kind sir, I thank you. I will go home and pray for strength to maintain my heart against this sad affliction."
Joanna felt grateful for the support of the colonel's arm towards her own home, and as they passed the barber's shop, they were surprised to see that the dog and the hat were gone.
Please join me next time for the further adventures of Sweeney Todd, here on Stories from the Shadows. In the meantime, I wouldn't blame you if you leave the lights on.